Our guest on the Paula Gordon Show is Kevin Phillips. Bill Russell, of course, is here. When we talk about history, at least when we talk about history, there's got to be a point. And it's kind of fun to muck around. But I'm hearing you getting to that point in terms of having looked at the experience that is English American, Anglo American, as you phrase it. Aren't you now talking about us when you talk about what happens after civil wars and things get complacent and the people come behind who are hungrier?
I'm afraid I am talking about us, and you can even think of some of the punitive expeditions this country with the British has mounted in the last two decades.
Well, when I say us, is this English speaking us? Is this the world as that speaks English, or are we really talking America and Great Britain?
Some of each, but right now I think I'm more talking about the countries that have the identity, because the British and the Americans really do sort of stick together in the war game too, and they're there in the same places. And I worry at this point that these expeditions remind me quite a bit of a 3rd and 4th century Rome, where you really can't push it back any longer, and there is only one superpower, but you don't have the wherewithal to deal with it very well, and you have a political system that's increasingly corrupt, and you have Roman emperors sitting eating grapes with their concubines as the troops go forth into Thrace or something, and I can even relate that.
It's real nice of you to put that in the past. Thank you very much.
So the parallels here, in the sense that we are this sort of aging empire with problems that are not new in some ways, that others have had before, is a very bothersome subcurrent of this.
There is the old line that those who forget history are condemned to repeat it. And it also seems that there is a corollary that those who remember history are condemned to repeat it. What it suggests to me, if those are both correct, what it says is we're sort of stuck in history. And that we ignore it at our peril, that it is just something that we have to factor in as we make decisions.
Well, you can say that, of course, the people in the Spain of the 16th century or the Rome of the 5th century didn't have good history books, so they didn't know what had gone before. But I think it's true to put it both ways, that you're in a lot of trouble if you don't remember it and be guided by it. But there's always a sufficient interval so that enough people are not interested in it, don't pay much attention, so therefore it's easy to see why a lot of it is repeated again. And you can learn and change, I think, only on the margins. That's why history is history.
Say some more about that. You can learn and change only on the margins?
Well, we can look at stages of the United States, both in terms of wars and development and internal conflict, and come up with some parallels to other countries. I'm not certain how instructive that is, because there is always an argument that a lot is new. There are new changes. There's a new context. There's always a lot of truth to this. Human nature doesn't change that much. But because it is a new context, and the other one is 100 years ago or 300 years ago, people, well, that doesn't count. It's not the same. This is different. And human nature, of course, is to say we're different. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you can posit the importance of history, but you don't seem to be able to make it really work to avoid old problems, because the old problem is human nature.
So what are the margins on which these changes happen?
Well, there's certain things you can see, and you can say that, well, I could talk about problems the United States would have as an aging empire, and some of it has to do with how you rearrange your economy. Some has to do with how you deal with wars. Some has to deal with how you have entrenched interest groups. Now, we're aware of all of these as a generality. And the interest groups people get concerned about, and they know it's a bad thing. Essentially, too many people are part of too many interest groups. You don't really want to absorb the lesson too much. Wars, well, there's the sense that, yes, we should be careful what we get involved in overseas. And everybody really doesn't want to get involved until the media are telling you that every fifth Slobovian is bayoneting a baby or something, and then the whole structure of human nature and feeling unhappy about it takes over. And they're just all the reasons why the historical awareness doesn't change as much as you might think it would.
Mm-hmm. You note somewhere in your book that a sage, sagacious political geographer would have pointed out 200 years ago that this flow of events was occurring and these people were here and these people were here. And I sort of had the sense that the sage political geographer had some similarity to you, that you see yourself as a political geographer, which is a fascinating notion, particularly for those of us who grew up at a time when geography was diminishingly important. And I think now nobody even wants to talk about geography.
Except Jared Diamond.
Except, well, there are people, but they are exceptions. But some of the flows of people and the political perspectives and the actions predicated on that you were able to extract from the geological predicates combined with, you know, the origins, it is to me just remarkable.
Do you really mean geological?
Geographic. I'm back to the strata.
There's almost a geology too, and layers and everything. So, well, it's unfortunately true. The part of the book that referred to that was trying to predict which colonies in the British Empire would revolt, which was pretty easy to do if you went by their population of white descending Protestants, because that's where the revolt centered. But the absolutely extraordinary example of the longevity of these things is that in the 1936 election, 76 years after the election of Abraham Lincoln, the lead Republican state was the same state that had been Lincoln's top state, Vermont, and the seven Confederate states, the first to secede, were the best Democratic states in the rank order of their secession, with a minor little zig, only one zig, because Florida, which was one of the first seven, had moved to number eight, being replaced by Arkansas, because a lot of Yankees were moving into Florida. Just an incredible persistence.
And looking at history and looking at the future, my sense is that some of the stratification, the clear stratification, and the values that go with that are fuzzing up, that they are no longer as clear as they used to be. Is that fair, or can you still today pick out those CCDs, county census districts, and look at the populations and look at the demographics and have a real clear idea of where the votes are going?
You can still do a pretty good job in picking them out, but you have to use new yardsticks, especially if you get out into, say, the Western Sun Belt, the Arizonas and the Californians and so forth. Out there, an Anglo is defined as anybody of European extraction, now being broadened to include Lebanese, even Iranian expatriates. A total difference in the definition, say, in Massachusetts or Connecticut. But when you're out there, what you can still get a lot of mileage out of, obviously, Hispanic versus white, racial groups. But then the sort of extent to which you might have a suburb that consisted of all kinds of young, lower middle class in-migrants from other places, it'll be enormously volatile in its politics. It'll swing from being 43% for Perot to being something else Democratic and then some kind of Republican, because it doesn't have many roots. And then you can find an old rich suburb outside of L.A. in the Pasadena area, and that's going to be 85% Republican. It's not going to swing too much. There'd be areas of Democratic strength that would be similar. But it always depends on the yardsticks you're using. Don't use the old ethnic yardsticks of the East in California, because that'll lose you.
There are those who say California leads the nation in all kinds of things. So are you saying this is a precursor of what we can expect in the rest of the country?
California leads in a lot of ways, but there are important California out-migrations away from the West back to the Midwest, and there are migrations back to Oklahoma, to Colorado, up to Oregon and Washington. There is a small degree of migration back to Washington and New York, as there is from New York and Washington back to California. So I think the notion that California leads is a little less relevant than it used to be, but California is still the large and better crystal ball. But I don't think it leads as much.
As you say that, I think we must be a nation of malcontents who can't stay still.
Well, there are malcontents and malcontents. There are political malcontents. There are vocational malcontents. There are people who want to go back to school. There are religious dropouts. There are people who want to be ski bums. Malcontents come in all kinds of flavors. But this has always been a nation of malcontents.
The genius of democracy is its ability to reinvent itself, it seems, and the processes, the interactions, and the malcontents, that flow, that dynamic, that aliveness that is democracy. The winners in these wars you talk about, the ultimate winners, it seems, were capitalists with things around it. But the success, and particularly if you carry that forward today, and I'm thinking about a book you wrote recently about some of the challenges we have in dealing with our current government and working towards a new reinvention, the emergence of capitalism as the dominant value from these three wars, not to say the exclusive value, but at least a dominant value, has brought us to where we are today, which is good news and bad news. What I'm looking for is the yardstick, the values that you see that might take us to the next step, because this capitalism is also creating political problems that are challenging.
We're going to give Kevin Phillips a break time in which to think about answering that question,
right,
Bill.
Timing,
this is the Paula Gordon Show. Kevin Phillips is our guest. Bill Russell, of course, is here. And we're all going back shortly.